Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where family B2B brands go to grow. And today I'm joined by Mike Keller, founder of MK Roofing. Mike is a second generation roofer who quite literally grew up in the business, standing alongside his father at a very young age and eventually becoming a partner in the family company for over two decades. After a very successful run, Mike made the decision to step out and build something on his own, launching MK Roofing about 10 years ago. Today, MK Roofing specializes in commercial roofing and coating systems and spray polyurethane foam applications, helping property owners solve one of the most critical and costly problems they face, water infiltration. Mike, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Great to be with you today. So let's start at the beginning. You've been in this business since you were a kid. What was that like growing up in a roofing business as a young fella? What did that teach you about the world and business early on?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually, my dad started grabbing me for weekend work when I was 11 years old. So I started out on the ground cleaning up garbage. And, you know, what it taught me, it taught me a few things. It taught me hard work. It taught me the understanding of hard work. And it taught me the relationship of your input to your paycheck, that mm-hmm. if you work hard, you can make more money, which was a great lesson for a young guy. It taught me that working with my dad was something that I actually enjoyed, that, you know, I had a good time doing it. It was hard. He was your typical dad from his generation that was wanted to teach you a work ethic. He wanted to teach you principles. He wanted to teach you how to grind and how to stay focused and how to make money. So it was difficult because I was also a young man, right? I was 11. I wanted to go to parties with friends at school. I would go in on Monday and everybody be talking about something, and I'd be like, yeah, I was picking up garbage. But that changed really quick, because by the time I was 13, he had taught me how to be a mechanic. So I was actually nailing shingles down. I was dealing with the actual waterproofing part of roofing. So mm-hmm. it was an education. And then by the time I was 15, I was, you know, I always tell the story to people that ask about my dad leaving me on a job with a crew of men, 40-year-old men, not young men, men. Yeah. And I was 15. And he said, here's the scope of work. Here's what you're responsible for doing today. And he left. And and I said, oh man, I guess we're really here. And so I spent, you know, that day really taught me a lot. He came back about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and he said, all right, show me what you did. And I showed him what I did, and I showed him what the other guys were doing. And, you know, he was kind, but he was also wanted to use it as a teaching opportunity and said, okay, look at that detail over there that guy did. It's not proper. Mm. And I said, okay. And as a 15-year-old guy, I was young. And yeah. And I said, well, look at what I did over there. I laid down 10 square by myself. And he goes, that's a great story, but you got to do that and that all at the same time. And I said, oh, okay. And I that's how I learned, right? And that's how it actually turned me into a probably one of my best skills is running jobs mm-hmm. and having eyes in the back of my head. And that's a direct result of him pushing me to do that at a very young age. So
a little, you know, not often recognized fact for next generation. If anyone thinks that we get it easier for being the next generation, Usually we got to work harder, better, and do it 10x better than the person sitting next to us or standing next to us.
I agree with that. The bar was very high, so high, and I know we'll get to it in the discussion, but my son is interested in being a roofer, and although I am taking some similar approaches, I have an intimate understanding of what he's going through as a young man, because I remember being there. And I'm pushing him on certain things, but I'm giving him some space on others, just because of my experience. So.
So it's and normally we hear those stories, but usually not at the age of 15, Mike.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I remember one job in particular was, I was about 12, and the deal between my mom and dad was he's staying on the ground. My mother used to say, I don't want him on the roof. I don't want him on the roof. He's dangerous. He's young. And so we were doing a job not far from our family home. And my mother came by at lunch just to say hi. This was back before cell phones and, communication. And so she stopped by. Well, she pulled up, and guess where I was? Up on
Course.
the roof. And she got out of the car, and she got upset, and she had an argument with my dad, and he said, hey, he's working. That's just the way it is, And after that, she just kind of accepted the fact that that's the way it was going to be. So.
So what, kind of fast forward a little bit. You ended up spending 20 years in partnership with your dad. He obviously held you to a high standard at a ridiculously young age,
Yeah.
but also probably because on some level he felt you were ready for it, or else he probably wouldn't have. But across that 20-year span, Mike, what made that work? You and your dad working together. Why was that such a good partnership?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think really what made it work is that we both knew our lane. So in the beginning, clearly my dad was the teacher, the mentor, the guy that taught me how to be a roofer, the guy that taught me how to be a supervisor. He taught me some very tangible things. Then when I graduated high school, I decided I wanted to go to college. So I did a couple of years at a community college, and then I transferred into a four-year business school. And when I came out of business school is when I sat down with my dad and I said, listen, I love what I'm doing. I'd like to continue to do it, but we need to be partners. And he said, I agree with that. That's great. And I think what made that relationship work was that we knew our lane. So I always viewed him as, aside from being my dad, just a mentor that kind of taught me the ropes on the roof and what to do and what not to do and how to be a good mechanic. When I came back from business school, my dad looked at me and said, hey, you've got an education that I never got. He didn't go to college. He didn't have a business background per se. He was just a guy that decided he was going to be a roofer because he needed to feed his family. And so I think the marriage there of his skill set and my skill set, they complemented each other. So now we got into the finer points of marketing and advertising and P&Ls and how to scrutinize a P&L and what do we make the most money on? And how we talk about gross margin, all things that were new to him. So, I think what made it work was a mutual respect for each other and what we were good at, and understanding that together we could go much further together than we could by ourselves. So we really developed our own lanes inside the business, if you will. My dad kind of took on more of the sales role. I took on more of the operations and back end management and financial management responsibilities. And, I'll never forget the first year I partnered up with him. I came back from college and I wrote three P&Ls, right? So fresh out of business school, excited, young, 21, 22, whatever it is. And I sit there and I said, all right, here's what we're gonna do. And I wrote down a break-even P&L, and I showed him, details. I showed him a middle of the road P&L where, hey, we're making a little bit of money, we're doing okay. And then I showed him one where, hey, this is going to be a great year if we can, hit these numbers. And he took the two and he pushed him to the side and he goes, that'll probably never happen. And he said, let's focus on the break even one. And I said, yeah, okay, let's do that. Well, year one, we smoked my best version of the P&L.
Really?
And yeah, we just blew it out of the water. And then he came back after year one and I reviewed that with him and he said, I'm gonna follow your lead. And we're gonna you can show us where to go from here on in. And that was kind of how it worked. So he realized, like, hey, I'm a good roofer and I'm a guy that's been around a long time, but I made an investment in my son to A, turn him into a good roofer, a great mechanic, and B, get him an education and have him understand some business concepts that he may not have been intimately familiar with. And that's what made it work, was a mutual respect and an understanding that there were certain things he was good at and there were certain things I was good at. And together it was great.
And was that really what you would attribute to just kind of out of the gate, your first kind of full year in as, a true partner in the business, blowing the expectations or going beyond the expectations? Was that just, would you attribute it just to the two of you, that dynamic just working so well that it just drove the
That,
business faster than you anticipated?
yeah, that was a big part of it. But it was twofold. One was that I was a young guy and I was super aggressive and I wanted to make my mark in the world.
Sure.
I wanted to go out and I was in, I'm going to take over the world mode. I was fresh out
Sure.
of business school.
Yeah.
Testosterone was flowing like mad. I was a young guy. I had all this energy and so it was the combination of those two things. It was my
Okay.
drive and that relationship and how that relationship worked out. So it was those things.
Would you say that he too was invigorated by that? Like your dad, like did he,
It definitely invigorated by that. Yeah,
yeah.
I think it opened up my parents, probably much like your parents, were raised by Depression era parents, right?
Yep.
So it was there was always this mentality among my parents of play it safe, don't go
Sure.
too far out on a limb, and I'm not saying I'm a guy that likes to roll the dice and take lots of chances, but I am not adverse to taking reasonable chances and trying new things and doing things that are going to move the needle ultimately. So
Put it in context too, like you are in the roofing business. It's there's safer lines of profession.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think he was definitely reinvigorated and it carried him through the twilight of his career. It got him
Yeah.
excited. So.
But then at some point, he did step back, and from a previous conversation, you said at that point the business dynamic started to shift.
Yeah.
So talk about that period and what was happening and what was changing for you.
So my dad retired, partially retired. He tried to retire, let's put it that way. So he retired and wasn't a partner anymore. After about 90 days, my mom called me and said, you got to get this guy out of my house. I'm going to kill him. 50 years he's been at work. It's quiet now. Everything's dirty. He makes a mess. He's loud. And I said, all right. So I said, I'll call him. So I call him up and I said, hey, Pop, what's going on? He said, well, retirement's not all it's cracked up to be. I like having some time on my hands. And the first couple months were good, but now I got too much time on my hands. So he decided to come back to work. I said, why don't you come back as an employee? I'll pay you a day rate. You can have Wednesdays off to go golfing. And I'll hand you a list in the morning. You'll have little or no customer responsibility. You can run around and chase guys and pick up material and do all that. And he said, that's great. So he did that for another 6 or 7 years. So that changed the dynamic a little bit with him not being a partner anymore, but not much because by that time, I really was running operations, running all the financials. He didn't have much involvement there. But what did change is my youngest brother was an employee to my father and I for probably 3, 4, maybe 5 years before my dad retired. My brother really wasn't involved in the business from the Genesis. Like, he would work here and there, but he was never fully committed. Then he was fully committed as an employee, and then he expressed an interest in buying in. So he bought in for 25%, and things seemed to be going okay. And then he bought in another 25%, and we became 50-50 partners. And the dynamic that changed was, I think I still had it in my mind that this would be a carbon copy relationship to the one I had with my dad. Except it wasn't. You know, my brother's my brother, and he's a great guy, and I love him. He's my brother. But we had different mindsets. I was the oldest out of all the kids. He was the youngest. There was probably a te there's almost a 10-year difference between us, and generationally that was a big difference. So there was just a difference in our work ethic and our mentality and how we approached the business at large. And he had different ideas than I did. Not that his ideas are bad, they were just different than mine. And I think I was more focused on maintaining how things had always been, and he was focused on doing things a little differently. So ultimately became a challenge.
So then at some point, I guess to the point where you said you made a very hard decision to essentially step away and start over and launch MK Roofing. So talk about that. What gave you the, what were the signals or indicators or the conviction that gave you the sense that, okay, it's time for me to launch this on my own?
So I think, there became a realization that it would never be the same way it was when it was with my dad, for obvious reasons. I mean, that seems real obvious, right? Different people, different ages, different time. But I think there was part of me that was hanging on, saying, "Ah, it'll work, it'll work, it'll work." But it was a struggle for me. It was a struggle for me because I didn't feel like we were really partners. I felt like I was running most of the business, and it was a challenge. It was just a challenge. So yes, I finally, my brother and I, after talking over the course of probably a couple years, we just decided that the best thing to do was for me to exit. So we settled on a number, and he bought me out. In that transaction, there was obviously a time for a non-compete, just because, I couldn't leave him and dive right back into the roofing space. So I took a couple year hiatus from roofing, and then just decided that, I had tried some other things, messed around with some other things, and decided, like, hey, this is really all I know. This has been my life for, since I was
Little kid.
prepubescent. Since I was a little kid, I started roofing. I didn't even have hair on my arms yet. You know what I mean? Like, I was a little boy. You know what I mean? So it was really just what I knew, and that's what attracted me to moving back into the roofing space. And then inside of that, I also saw some facets of the roofing space that, when I was with my family, when I was partners with my dad, that I didn't pay much attention to. So we did some light commercial. Most of our work was residential. We did some light commercial here and there, but not lots of it. We didn't do any fluid applied systems. We didn't do any spray foam. We didn't do any single ply membranes. It was so I saw an opportunity where I could learn something new in the industry, and after getting into it, I found the commercial side of the business real attractive. As a middle-aged guy now, it's a different mentality. It's a different sale. Not that I don't like the resi business. I love the resi business. It's great, but I also like the commercial business. So I think that's what reinvigorated me as an entrepreneur and as a roofing guy to say, hey, this is something I can sink my teeth into. I can stick with the residential because it's what I know and I'm good at it. I can do it in my sleep. I can get more into the commercial business because it's new, it's attractive, it's a challenge for me. I'm learning more things, I'm engaged, I'm motivated, and there's different products and services that I can go out and sell. And that was really the genesis of MK, was, hey, I want to do this. and I want to do some of the things the same way I always did, but there's also a whole new world out there, so to speak, where I can go out and plant my flag and learn and grow and improve, not only as a human, but as a roofer, and offer some value to people that have a need for my service.
Okay, excellent. So in launching MK Roofing, there was obviously more of a commercial slant, a bit more of an embracement of newer technologies or new systems, if you will, and
Sure.
applications. Was there anything else that, because you'd already, in partnership with your dad, hugely successful, so you were
Yeah.
successful once. So as you were going the second time around, was there anything else that you're saying, hey, maybe I'm going to change this, or I'm going to do this differently, or maybe something that you couldn't fully express before as a leader that you're saying, all right, now it's mine fully and wholly and singularly, and I'm going to do it this way. Was there anything else beyond the slant towards commercial and new age
I
apps
think,
that?
yeah, no, that's a great question. I think what's really important to me, and when I embarked on the MK journey, what really, stuck out to me was integrity. I wanted to go out and offer people solutions. Not that I wasn't doing this in the previous iteration, but this time I was doing it by myself. So I didn't have family members around me. I didn't have that built-in staff. I had to develop my own people. I had to develop people I was going to bring in. I had to develop my own crews. I had to do all these things. But I found it engaging and more interesting because I was able to just change the script on a few things and be more precise in how I wanted to present my goods and services to the world and to my clients. And
Right.
it was more relationship driven. That's really what it was. I felt like at Keller and Sons, it was really transactional. You're doing a house a day. Some, at our peak, we were doing five houses a day, every day, all day.
Oh, oh my
So
gosh.
yeah, we were an eight-figure company. We were moving, but it was very transactional. There was so much happening. There were so many things going on. I never met half the clients that we worked with. I never got to touch them or talk to them or be a part of it. And I really wanted to get back to me being more involved in the transaction, being able to engage with folks, being able to understand their needs and offer them solutions that are practical, cost-effective, but have integrity, that are going to do the right job for them. And I think that's what I found attractive.
Nice, nice. So speaking of solving problems, one of the big solves that you bring forth is the issue of water infiltration,
Yeah.
which, sounds like, okay, that's a simple issue, but it can be a massive issue, if not addressed or not addressed correctly for, not only residential, but certainly property owners who are dealing with major league water issues. So what and let's face it, the average bear doesn't always think about the roof. They know it's important, but they don't always think about it, of course, until something goes sideways, right? So
Yeah.
what do most people that you talk with often misunderstand about the roof or roofing related issues?
Yeah. So I think what I see in both the residential and the commercial space is people tend to view their roof and the associated conditions, siding or walls or flashings or whatever, they view it all as an expense and as a commodity. When really what I try and impart upon people is talking to them about protecting their property and protecting their investment. I mean, if it's a residential situation, typically their home is one of their biggest investments. It's one of their biggest financial vehicles. It's a place where they have most of their money parked. If it's a commercial building, same thing. There's not a lot of commercial spaces that you're buying cheap. It's an investment. And what I really try and impart on people or get them to understand is that you shouldn't be afraid of these things. You should be actively engaged with these things. Meaning, if you start to see something wrong, you should probably call a professional and have it checked out. Most people want to kick the can or say, "Oh, I don't want to know the truth." Well, a lot of times, if you can be made aware of the truth or the circumstances or the possibilities, you can then pull the covers to your side of the bed, whether it's on the resi or the commercial side, and do some proactive maintenance or deal with whatever potential issue is starting to brew, and buy yourself more time so that you can plan and allocate funds and then deal with what you need to on a grander scale. What I do say to people though is, putting your head in the sand and ignoring this is not, it's only going to make things worse for you. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to deal with, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I can't wait to buy a roof. You know what I mean? 40 something years in this business, I could see a guy getting up and being like, oh man, I want a new big screen TV, or I want a Corvette, or I want a beach vacation. But nobody gets up and says, I can't wait to buy a roof. So I think there's an aversion to dealing with it. But when you look at what it does to protect your asset and your family or your employees or your tenants or whoever it is, it's definitely something that demands your attention. And if you choose to ignore it, eventually it'll really demand your attention and you'll have no choice but to give it some love. And that's what I always recommend to folks, is to be proactive. You know, be proactive, pay attention to things. Don't let small things turn into big things. And don't be afraid. Find a roofer or a service provider or a contractor that you feel comfortable with and you trust to talk to about these things. You know, don't always go to the worst case scenario of, oh my God, I'm going to need a new one and it's going to cost me tons of money. Because that might not be the case. That might not be the reality. There might be some small mitigations you can perform to make sure that you're keeping the wheels on the wagon while you plan for a capital improvement on the road. So.
And if I'm hearing you correctly, once a roof issue or problem sort of starts, it sounds like it only goes one direction, and that's from bad to worse.
They never get better on their own, let's put it that way. It's not something you can just say, oh, maybe tomorrow it'll be different. It probably won't.
And as I'm thinking about certainly and often I think it can be positioned as an asset, because I can think of lots of conversations with real estate agents, whether it be on the commercial or residential side, and they are always quick to point out, hey, just had a new roof put on, so clearly they're recognizing that as an enduring asset that's just or an improvement that's been made that's got some lasting value. So it's definitely positioned as an asset in a deal,
100%. Yeah, 100%. And I understand why it's scary. People perceive it as always being expensive. And depending on the property and the type of roof it is, it can be. It's an investment. It's part of it. So.
Now, sometimes, and you touched on this earlier on, you're involved in a lot of different specialty coatings or SPF systems, which often might represent either a faster or more cost-effective solution versus a full-on replacement. Certainly, as you go out to whether it be on the commercial side or the residential side, I'm sure you're talking with potential buyers who don't know the latest and greatest in terms of roofing technology or substrates or applications or coatings. So, how do you help them kind of walk through the options, if you will, whether there's a coating application that can be the solution versus a full-on, say, replacement?
Yeah, so the way I start with that is the genesis of that conversation is always an inspection. So once I get up on the roof, I can, looking at the roof, doing in a commercial setting, maybe some core samples, understanding what their challenges are. Are they leaking? Are they not? What type of material is it? How old is it? What's the condition based on age? Once I do that assessment, what I really like to do is give potential clients as many options feasible and options with different cost ranges and different features and benefits, and then educate them on those possibilities. Like really, really get them to understand, hey, if you go with this, this could be the result, this could be the expense, and this is going to be the longevity. That's option A. And then if we go option B, this is the reality of this. And here's the expense, here's the longevity, here's the required maintenance, and kind of throw it out there. Because I think it's important that people are participative in how they spend their money. And even deeper than that, they really need to understand what they're spending their money on and what the options are. So I always try and do that. And then if I go out and do an inspection and I find that, listen, this is in such bad shape or has jumped the shark to a point where it can't be saved. Here's what I think is your best approach or your best option. So, it's all predicated upon where the roof is currently in its life cycle and what the condition is. And then from there, I always try and give people as many reasonable or options that would get the job done for them. I do find that, there's folks that, to your point, the layperson doesn't understand all this stuff. Maybe you get a commercial property owner that has numerous properties or has been in the commercial space for a really long time. They're probably more educated than most, but even then, it's a very surface level, high level type of a look. But giving people what's the latest and greatest out there and what's working and what's hot and what's cost effective, I think you're only doing them a service by giving them all the options that are available.
And I think you referenced it earlier in our conversation. The facility, the structure, it's an asset, and how they intend to make use of that asset may also guide that decision, I imagine. For instance, are they looking to hold it for a long period of time? Are they looking to repurpose it? Are they looking to sell it? I'm sure that can often influence some their way forward, and certainly you can guide them based on their long range objectives as to what's the best option in the near term.
100%. Yeah. And that's a conversation I have, particularly with commercial property owners, is what's the goal here? What are your long-term plans? I was on a really large building in Parsippany 2 weeks ago, and it's vacant and it's got some roof leaks. And the gentleman called me out and he said, come take a look, and what can we do to stop the leaking? So I said, well, you really need a roof, but there's some small minor repairs we can do. And because of the size of this roof, even the small minor repairs, it was about a $30,000 investment. In context, to replace this roof was probably $500,000. So 30K versus $500,000, obviously huge disparity. But he said to me, I'm not even prepared to make that kind of investment because my goal is I have a contract on the building, and the people that are buying it plan to knock it down. So he was looking for, do you have the $500 or $1,000 solution? And I said, look, on a building this size, $500 is going to get the van parked out front. $1,000 might get a guy walking in the door, but after that, there's not much left to do anything. I mean, there's just nothing. So understanding their goals and what their long-term plans are really, really, really important. Is it a buy and hold? Is it a flip? Is it something you're going to put tenants in? There's just a lot of questions, and everybody's situation is different. So.
But it sounds like you get to that early on in the conversation, and then still give them the options, but know
Of
that based
course.
on what they're trying to do, it gives you a bit more guidance as to what in your expert opinion the best option would be for the situation at hand. That kind of makes
That's
sense.
right. That's right. Yeah. Another thing I try and do with folks in that situation, or along in concert with that conversation, is once I do understand what's going on, and if it is a hold and they are going to be there long term, then let's talk about some life cycle planning, about some CapEx planning. Like, okay, here's where you're at. You should probably budget X dollars a month, a year for maintenance. And you should probably start budgeting X dollars a year towards replacement over the course of so many years. It's one thing on a residential setting to say, hey, I'm going to need a roof, and it's 10, 15, 20, 30, $30,000, whatever. Don't get me wrong, that's money. That's real money, and it's a lot of money. But that's different than if you own a strip mall and a new roof is going to cost you $3 million. That's not something you want sneaking up on you. You want to understand where you are in the life cycle of the roof and how that plays into your long-term planning. It's important.
Now, is proactive maintenance one of your service lines? Will you provide ongoing maintenance when called for?
Proactive maintenance is something that I always recommend to customers, particularly in the commercial world. It's just, you need somebody up there, you need somebody looking around, you need somebody clearing drains, getting debris off the roof. that's something that I see as the price of entry if you're a commercial property owner. Some owners don't feel that way. They say, I don't know, I'll call you when I have a problem. And that's perfectly okay. It's their discretion. Generally speaking, we can stay ahead of those things and improve and promote longevity when we're up there doing either annual or biannual inspections. So it's again something that I try and propose or position as a benefit, not a detriment, right? It's an investment in your long-term care of your asset. And some people share that. Some people look at it and say, no, I'm not going to spend the dime until I have to. And that's fine. That's their prerogative.
I would have to think that by virtue of doing that, eventually, let's face it, every roof's going to need to be replaced
Gonna
someday,
need something. Gonna need
right?
some attention, one way or another. That's right.
But by doing that, I'd have to think that you could extend the life cycle of that latest investment iteration, instead of maybe, hey, it's going to be, if you do nothing, maybe in 3 to 5 years, you're going to need to fully replace, or maybe that looks more like an 8 or 10 year horizon. I don't know, but
That's right. That, and that's the conversation. And there's a lot of products out there now that folks aren't intimately familiar with. Coatings for one of them, silicone coatings. So if we go up on a 20-year-old EPDM roof that has been relatively maintained and doesn't have any massive problems, it was a good install from the start, we can offer a coating system and put a 10-year manufacturer back warranty on that for a fraction of the price of replacement and push that out another 10 years, you know? I mean, so there's real value in some of these some of these possibilities. And that's what I try and show people. Again, in the commercial world, I really try and position it as ROI, you know, what is your return on your investment? Because at the end of the day, that's what it is, right? It's a business. It's a business decision. It's less emotional and it's more fact-based and more dollars and cents based, more P&L based, right? More planning based. So
So, in the greater geography, MK Roofing is not the only roofer in town, right? So a number of competitors out there, and all at a glance, at a layperson's glance, they all seem to be knowledgeable, and they all seem to be able to do things and have been around. And so how do you differentiate in that credit space and let people see that, okay, of all the options, MK Roofing is your best option when it comes to roof maintenance, repair, or refitting?
That's a great question, and it's something that I contend with every day. You know, people tend to view roofing as a commodity, right? A roof is a roof is a roof. So the roof I'm putting on is the same roof that the other guy's going to put on. It's the same roof the other guy's going to put on, and that's not accurate, in my opinion and in my experience. I always try and position things and get people to understand the difference in quality of materials, quality of install. I, depending on the situation, but in most situations, I recommend manufacturer-backed NDL warranties, which is no dollar limit warranties, which means when I come do a job, I have to register it with the manufacturer. They approve the specification before I even set foot on the property to complete that work. Then when we finish the job, they come out and they do an inspection. Whether it's a coating job or it's a TPO single ply job, they actually attend, they look at all the details, and they give it a stamp of approval. I always recommend that because it raises the bar and brings things to a higher level. The other thing that I explain to folks is that, you know, if I hit the lottery or God forbid got hit by a truck, you always have a phone number to call for the next 20 years when you need roofing service. So if you develop a leak, you can call the manufacturer and say, hey, I got a leak. And if it was a roof that MK put on, they're going to call me and they're going to pay me to go out and take a look at it and fix it and do whatever needs to be done. Or if I'm not around, they're going to find someone else who's an approved installer and they'll get that taken care of. So that's one way I try and differentiate myself. The other way is just reminding people that, you know, we all have experiences in our life where we're all consumers. We're all buying food, we're all buying cars, we're all buying clothes, we're all buying different things. And what I always try and impress upon people is keep in mind that you get what you pay for. So if you're getting estimates and some are wildly different than others, it's probably something you want to be aware of. It's something you want to be cognizant of, right? It's
Yeah.
something that you want to say, well, geez, I got three guys that are over here and I got one guy that's down here. How can that be? You know, is it inferior materials? Is it inferior installs? But that's another thing I try and bring up. And then honestly, what I'll do too, Ed, is I'll show folks, like, for example, I got a call earlier in the week and I went out and visited these gentlemen on Tuesday of this week. It was for a CVS down in Central Jersey. So they called me and said, hey, we got a problem with the roof. Can you come check it out? I said, of course. We made an appointment. I met him down there. After asking some questions and understanding the situation, I found out that the roof that's on the building is less than a year old. And I said, so why am I here? And they said, well, the guy, you know, did a bad job. He didn't do the right job. And now we have leaks and he's not able to fix them, or he refuses to fix them. And now we have to sue him. And now we need a guy like you to come in and fix this thing for us. So I always try and share those types of experiences with potential clients if we get that far, if they're really on the fence about what to do and why to do it, because that's the real world situation right there. That's what's going to happen if you buy something just based on price. And I'm not suggesting that people should overpay for a roof. That's not what I'm getting at. But there is a reality to what things cost, and there is a reality to what things cost to do properly and do the right way. And when you measure it through that lens, that's when I think you're able to show some difference between you and the next company. And that builds value and that builds credibility. You know, another thing that I really try and do is position myself as a guy that we're going to have a relationship. We're not going to be best friends. You're not going to call me once a week, but I might be out once a year to do your maintenance, or we might be doing, you know, there's going to come a time when you need me for something. So let's be, you know, let's be proactive and be on the same page and understand that we're embarking on a journey together, not just a transaction, you know, and that's kind of what I do. Some people that resonates with and it's important to them. Other people, you know, certain people are just focused on numbers, and I get that. And listen, sometimes my numbers look great compared to others, and sometimes they don't. It really depends on what the situation is and what I'm putting forth. And that's the reality of it. So.
And it sounds like this time around with MK, one of the things you said before, and it sounds like it's true to form, is just being a lot more intentional about the relationships you're forging, even if it's a seemingly transactional. Well, not necessarily. You're going to be back to make sure
That's right.
that everything is functioning as it should, for a good long while, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the idea.
So you've done this twice now. You've done it once with your dad, scaling a business up to a fairly high level, and here you go again with MK. Now you're on the rise again. So not doing it once, but doing it twice. When you and as I recited, there's a number of roofing contractors out there, and there's a bunch of other contractors and other disciplines out there, but not all make it. When it comes to growing and scaling, why do you think some that didn't make it, as far as you have, where do you think they tend to fail or falter?
We're in an industry where a lot of guys that just because they're great mechanics, they're great installers, they think that they can forge out on their own. And in some cases they're wildly successful, but I think in most cases they have a very short shelf life. And the reason they do is because with running a business, as you know, it's not just about performing the act of installing the roof. You have to understand insurance and taxes and marketing and gross margin and markup, and you have to know how to read a P&L, and you have to generate a P&L. You have to understand what all that looks like. And I think inevitably when guys are out there and they're like, hey, I'm a great installer and I can do this, and most times they are. They're fantastic installers. But the reality is that maybe they're not really good at all that other stuff. And I think that's why a lot of guys fall apart, is they don't have the global view of running a business. They have a very tunnel vision view of, hey, I'm a great installer. I can throw down X amount of squares a day. I think guys that come to the space, and that's what I like most about my pedigree, is I've been the hardcore install guy. You know, am I still doing hardcore installs? No, I'm a little old. Am I still on jobs? Do I still want to participate? Yeah. Does my wife yell at me and say you shouldn't be doing that anymore? Yeah. But it's in my gut, it's in my heart. But it's also the other side of it where I know what it's like to scale a business and what some of the challenges are and the pitfalls and things that are going to happen and how to deal with them and how to address them and how to navigate through that. And that's, so I really think that's the difference in this particular space that I'm in, that gives me a little bit of an edge is looking at it more globally.
Well, they often say that people that go into the trades either came with a briefcase in hand or a toolbox in hand. And your journey's a bit interesting, Mike, because you kind of came with a briefcase in one hand and a toolbox in
Cool box in the other.
the
That's a great description. Yeah, because that's the
other.
way I feel, you know. And as a younger guy, it was really difficult for me because I did have a ton of energy and my body wasn't hurting like it does now, and I was able to really perform on the jobs. And I think now, what's made it easier for me to say, okay, what should I be doing? Is I should be running my business instead of, you know, working with the tools or something like that. So it's a little more obvious at this point in my life, but
Well,
yeah.
as I understand it, you've got somebody else who's younger that can be jumping up on roofs, and that would be your son, who's
That's
now
right.
already
Yeah.
working with you somewhat and talking about being, that next generation roofer.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
let's talk about that. How does that feel knowing that you're now on the other side of the legacy equation? Now, Gen 3 roofing in the family is looking to enter.
Yeah, that's really exciting to me, Ed. I you know, it makes me smile whenever I talk about it, you know. Obviously very proud that my son would even entertain that he's even considering that. But also it's, you know, he's 15 now. He started working with me when he's 12. I didn't quite give him the boot camp that I endured. I kind of toned it down a little bit and said, hey, listen, I want you to start learning this stuff, but I also want you to be a kid. I want him to play his sports and do his things, and that's great, and he is. But he does have an interest. He is on jobs. He is working with the guys. He's astute and he's curious, and he's very tactile, so he likes working with his hands. What it's done for me is really reinvigorated me, so I can feel how my dad felt when I kind of came in and said, hey, you know, let's do this. And that's what I feel now, is I feel like, hey, I have a ton of experience and a lot of a wealth of knowledge that I can be of assistance to him with. So I really feel like I can go into my, you know, 80s. I'm going to stay on the ground. I'm probably not going to be climbing anymore. And I may spend more time in the office, but I can mentor him and I can bring him along and I can tell him, no, we don't do it that way, and here's why. You know, whether it's on the business side or the install side. You know, my daughter, who's 13, is my wife runs our back office. So my wife runs all of our financials. She takes care of all the AP, the AR, all the interface with the accountant, all that kind of stuff. My wife is engaged with my daughter now, and my daughter is actively working on some of that stuff. So, we're really trying to create. Well, I shouldn't say we're trying to create. We're offering it up to them. I don't want to force it on anybody. I don't want to say this is what you're going to do. But in today's world, it's a crazy place, right? So having something to fall back on, or having something to do that is established, that is proven as a way that you can earn a living and feed yourself and your family, is an asset, I believe. That's and so, you know, getting them to open their eyes to that, ultimately the decision to proceed or not is up to them. I wouldn't hold it against them either way. But nevertheless, it fills me with pride, it fills me with optimism, and just puts a lot of wind in my sails to say, hey, I can keep going now, you know.
That's
So
awesome. That's awesome. And I think what's showing up most certainly in your son, maybe in your daughter, she's a little younger,
Sure.
but is that same root passion for the work and for being involved in the craft and the trade that you had. Now you might do it differently. You might not say to him, "Okay, kid, you're in charge. I'll be back at 4 o'clock."
The day I'll never
You might do it a
forget.
little
Yeah.
differently.
That's it. That's right. Yeah.
But nonetheless, it's really endearing to see it come full circle,
Yeah.
and what you're
100%.
building is truly a multifaceted family business end to end. So that's got to be fun too.
That's
So
fun.
now as you look ahead, and we've started to look ahead a little bit and saying, it sounds like your intention is to be part of this organization for a good long while, but maybe not looking out to your 80s, Mike, but maybe on the next 5 to 10 year horizon. What do you want MK Roofing to become? What would be your vision?
So, my vision for MK Roofing is to have a presence in the residential world where we're able to capitalize on my, decades of experience and knowledge in that realm and be able to help people, be able to help folks with their challenges, and also to continue to grow and move forward in the commercial space. So I definitely want to be multifaceted in that regard. And what I really want to do is I want to grow again. I want to scale. I'm actively doing that. We're actively growing. But I want to maintain the family culture. I want to maintain the relationship with the clients. I want to stay grounded and involved in that. I want to, obviously, at the end of the day, whatever business you're is, there's a certain amount of transactional type of things that happen, right? But I also want to enjoy and be proud of what we're doing, and have people experience that with us and feel like, hey, these guys actually care. They're good at what they do. They care about what they do. And there's integrity there, right? We're not just, there's no hit and run jobs. There's no, hey, I just want, I'm gonna take your money and run. There's none of that nonsense. It's hey, we're here as a partner for you and your asset, whether it's a residential house or a commercial building or whatever the structure is. We're here to be a partner with you in your journey with whatever that asset is, and we want to help you. So that's my vision.
And the
Yeah.
good and the bad too.
Good in the back.
Recalling a past guest who said, "Hey, we don't always get it right, and we always assure a client on a sit down when something went amiss." He said, "Listen, we're going to talk this through, but what I want you to know is when we're done, we're going to fix this."
That's right.
And
That's right.
having the confidence in the team and in the relationship to be able to say that, and then that only comes from fostering at the start a really good healthy relationship with that customer. And it
That's right.
sounds like that's you're being very intentional about it this time around, for sure. So last
For sure.
question for you. If any
Sure.
of our listeners wanted to learn more about your story, or if they had some roofing issues and they want to connect with MK Roofing to find out what their options are, what's the best way for them to find you?
Best way to get me was just go on the web, go to our website, which is www.mkroofs.com. Our phone number is there. My email is there. You can fill out a web form. Obviously, there's lots of ways to get in touch, but that's probably the easiest one.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, to wrap up, what stands out in your story, Mike, is that legacy isn't always a straight line.
It's not.
Sometimes it means building alongside family, then stepping away, and then building again with a clearer sense of who you are, where you want to go, and what you want your business to represent in the form of MK Roofing. So, Mike, I just want to thank you for sharing your journey and the story behind the origins of MK Roofing and your legacy in the roofing business, and now Gen 3 coming along. Again, for our listeners, we've been speaking with Mike Keller, founder of MK Roofing, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ed. Really appreciate your time.
Same. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, And being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.